Return to the news, and page four, we have a story titled Virginia ABC Gets New CEO Amid Budget Limbo. This story written by Michael Martz of the Times-Dispatch. Governor Glenn Youngkin didn't have far to look for a new chief executive officer at the struggling Virginia Alcoholic Beverage Control Authority. Youngkin announced on Tuesday that he is appointing Dale Farino, a retired alcoholic beverage distribution executive, whom he named to the ABC board last month to lead the authority. The governor also announced that he is replacing Farino as vice chairman of the board with Mark Stefanane, the former owner and CEO of Loveland Distributing Company, a beer wholesaler based in Richmond, which is now owned by Premium Distributors of Virginia. Dale Farino's exceptional background in both national and international beverage distribution positions positions him perfectly to lead the Virginia ABC, the governor said in a written statement. His strategic insights and operational expertise are vital as we continue to enhance our services, increase revenues, and enforce the regulations that keep Virginians safe. The appointments come as ABC awaits the resolution of a state budget dispute that will determine both its level of independence from the governor's control and the amount of profit it is expected to generate for the state over the next 2 years. The authority conceded this year that the state-owned liquor monopoly will produce $110 million less in state profits than the Youngkin administration had required in the budget that the ABC board adopted in August. Farino, retired executive vice president of Breakthrough Beverage Virginia, made clear in a board meeting last month that he did not see how declining liquor sales could support the 5% annual growth in revenues that ABC included in its budget and the governor used in the five-year revenue forecast that he gave the governor's advisory council on revenue estimates last fall. "I'm trying to find out where the disconnect was," he said last March at the first board meeting for him and Lisa Jennings, whom the governor also had just appointed. Youngkin's office touted Farino's experience at Breakthrough, as well as previous leadership roles at Tidewater Wholesalers, the Coca-Cola Bottling Co., and as former president of the Wine Wholesalers Association. These experiences sharpened his experience in managing large-scale operations and developing strategies that respond effectively to dynamic market needs, the governor's announcement states. ABC is coping with a nationwide trend of declining liquor sales as consumers seek to save money by buying cheaper brands in smaller bottles and legal cannabis sales cut into the market share for alcoholic beverages. The previous authority board adopted a revised budget based on a 5% annual growth in revenues under pressure from Youngkin and then Chief Transformation Officer Eric Muller to slash operating expenses and boost the level of profits that ABC transfers to the state general fund budget. Subsequently, longtime CEO Travis Hill resigned in November, leaving Tom Kirby, Chief of Law Enforcement at ABC, to lead the authority on an interim basis. Sales already had begun to decline in July, but the bottom dropped out in January, leading the ABC board to consider a revised forecast that would leave the authority about $5 million short in profits this year, $44 million under forecast in the fiscal year that begins on July 1, and $66 million short in the following year. The board never adopted the revised forecast, despite pressure from legislators, but Youngkin lowered the profit expectation in the revised budget he submitted to the General Assembly on April 8th. The governor and legislature then committed to negotiating a compromise to consider in a special assembly session that will convene on May 13th. "I look forward to leveraging my industry experience to advance ABC's mission and to serve the citizens of Virginia," Farino said on Tuesday. That story from page four was written by Michael Martz and was titled Virginia ABC Gets New CEO Amid Budget Limbo. Kevin?
Thanks, Simon. We're going to turn now to page 19, and this article comes from Associated Press journalist Jocelyn Gecker and Steve LeBlanc. And the title is, With Graduation Near, Colleges Seek to Balance Safety and Students' Right to Protest the Gaza War. Dateline, Cambridge, Mass. The University of Michigan informed students of the rules for upcoming graduation ceremonies. Banners and flags are not allowed. Protests are okay, but in designated areas away from the cap and gown festivities. The University of Southern California canceled a planned speech by the school's Muslim valedictorian. At Columbia University, where 100 students were arrested last week following protests, officials temporarily canceled in-person classes Monday as they work to find a resolution to the crisis. This is commencement season, 2024, punctuated by the tension and volatility that has roiled college campuses since Hamas' deadly October 7th attack on southern Israel. Militants killed about 1,200 people, most of them civilians, and took about 250 hostages. In response, Israel killed more than 34,000 Palestinians in the Gaza Strip, according to the local health ministry. Since the war began, colleges and universities have struggled to balance campus safety with free speech rights amid intense student debate and protests. Many schools that tolerated protests and other disruptions for months are now doling out more heavy-handed discipline. A series of recent campus crackdowns on student protesters included suspensions and, in some cases, expulsions. Columbia University President Manoush Shafiq said the Middle East conflict is terrible and she understands many are experiencing deep moral distress. But we cannot have one group dictate terms and attempt to disrupt important milestones like graduation to advance their point of view, she wrote in a note addressed to the school community Monday. The new measures have done little to stop protests. As recently as Monday, pro-Palestinian demonstrators set up encampments on campuses around the country, including at Columbia, the University of Michigan, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, and Yale University, where several dozen protesters were arrested after officials said they defied warnings to leave. Protesters want universities to take a number of actions, such as calling for a ceasefire in the war or divesting from defense companies that do business with Israel. The weapons being made in this country are being sent to Israel and being used in the war on Gaza, and so obviously we have to make those connections, said Craig Burkhead Morton, a Yale senior who was arrested Monday after refusing to leave a protest encampment. We have to highlight the difficulties the Palestinian people are going through. At MIT, protesters also asked the university to stop what they say is funding from the Ministry of Defense in Israel to university projects with military objectives. We believe that we have a platform that students in other universities don't have because of our unique ties to the Israeli military, said Shara Bouyan, a 21-year-old senior studying electrical engineering and computer science. The intense emotions on both sides have created a climate that has unsettled both Jewish and Muslim students. More than half of such students, and a fifth of all college students, reported feeling unsafe on campus because of their stances on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, according to a report published in March by the University of Chicago Project on Security and Threats. Among the commencement speakers likely to encounter protesters is President Joe Biden, who will speak at ceremonies next month for Morehouse College and the U.S. Military Academy. This month, the Anti-Defamation League sent an open letter to college and university presidents, urging them to take clear, decisive action to ensure graduation ceremonies run smoothly and safely. We remain deeply concerned regarding the possibility of substantial disruptions during commencement ceremonies, Shira Goodman, the ADL's senior director of advocacy, said in an emailed statement. On Thursday, Shafiq, the Columbia president, summoned New York City police to clear a pro-Palestinian tent camp from the university's campus after student protesters ignored repeated demands to leave, what she described as an extraordinary step to keep the campus safe. All 100 or so students arrested were charged with trespassing. Several were suspended. But as of Monday, a large protest encampment was once again set up on the campus's main lawn, where graduating students and families are set together next month. Several other college campuses around the country kicked off the new year with revised protest rules. In January, American University banned indoor protests. Harvard started the spring semester with guidance effectively limiting protests to outdoor areas. The University of Michigan drafted a proposed disruptive activity policy this month. Violations of the policy, which has not yet been implemented, could result in suspension or expulsion of students and termination of university staff. Last Monday, the University of Southern California cited substantial risks relating to security and disruption at the commencement when it announced it would break from tradition and not allow valedictorian Asna Tabassum, a first-generation South Asian American Muslim, to deliver a speech at the May 10th commencement. The decision sparked outrage. Several days of protests on campus, prompting another unexpected shakeup days later, the cancellation of a keynote speaker for the first time since 1942. The events at USC have raised concerns that other schools will bow to pressure and erode free speech, said Edward Ahmed Mitchell, a civil rights attorney and national deputy director of the Council on American-Islamic Relations. I am worried that schools might decline to select a qualified, visibly Muslim student who advocates for Palestine to avoid what happened at USC, he said. Schools are going to do more harm than good if they try to censor and silence commencement speakers, and especially students who have received the honor of speaking at their graduation ceremonies. And that from page A19 from Jocelyn Gecker and Steve LeBlanc of the Associated Press. With graduation near, colleges seek to balance safety and right to protest the Gaza war. Simon?
We move to page 9 for our next story. It's written by Dave Ress of the Times-Dispatch, entitled, Youngkin says, I have options on contraception bills. Not quite a week after the General Assembly brushed off his amendments to two bills ensuring the right to contraception and two more requiring insurance coverage, Governor Glenn Youngkin said he's still thinking about what to do. They're among 50 bills where legislators rejected his amendments, or, as in the contraception rights bills, simply let the amendments die without a vote. Particularly with regards to the bill to protect rights to contraception, I firmly believe that Virginians have a right to contraception, and it's a position that I have been very clear about from the moment that I stepped into this public life, Youngkin told reporters on Tuesday on the Capitol grounds. Youngkin spoke after a ceremony in which he accepted the annual tribute of three arrows, a beaver pelt, and a wampum belt from the Chiranaka Nodaway tribe to mark the 311th anniversary of the St. George's Day Peace Treaty. I also believe we have to protect our constitutional rights, particularly under our First Amendment, Youngkin said, noting that he thought the amendment he had sent the legislature accomplished that. So we're working through how to ensure both, he added. Asked if he would veto or sign the bill, Youngkin said, there's other things I can do as well. I'll let you know. He added, I think this is a chance for us to affirm and commit ourselves to the right to access to contraception, but also to make sure we're protecting our First Amendment rights as well. As for other bills, including proposals to end tax exemptions for the United Daughters of the Confederacy and to stop the issue of Confederate-themed license plates, Youngkin said he's still considering what to do. The General Assembly's right to contraception bill said the state and localities are not allowed to enact any law or put in place any regulation that prohibits or restricts the sale or use of contraceptives. Youngkin's amendment said state policy is that individuals have the right to contraception as set forth in the 1965 U.S. Supreme Court decision in Griswold v. Connecticut and the 1972 case of Eisenstadt v. Baird. State Senator Ghazala Hashmi, Democrat Chesterfield, who sponsored the Senate measure on the right to contraception, Senate Bill 237, said Youngkin's amendment gutted the bill. The bill was aimed at ensuring the right in the case the Supreme Court later overturned its earlier decisions. Both the Senate and the House of Delegates declined to consider the governor's amendment during last week's reconvened session, effectively killing it. That story was on page 9. It was written by Dave Ress and was titled, Youngkin Says I Have Options on Contraception Bills.
That's all the time we have for today's April 24th reading of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Kevin Smith, along with Simon Kelly for Virginia Voice. This program is brought to you through the generous support of the Richmond Times-Dispatch.